Melville Show is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Prohibition Opposition Television Network, brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot. Yeah!
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Prohibition Opposition Television Network presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, yeah. Welcome, everybody. So glad to have you here for our third show, middle of the week. On the Russ Belville Show, great to be here. We got Ganja John sitting in here in the studio. How you doing, John?
Yo, yo, yo. What's up, Russ? How are you doing?
Doing great. You got to test out the green screen last night for the first time.
I did.
And we're still working out the kinks.
We're still working it out. I did get a purple background for a little while.
Though. Does look pretty cool.
It was nice.
We've also got Wiz Calico hanging out here in the on the side cam. How you doing, Calico?
Aloha. Doing quite well. Glad to be back, as always.
Now, tonight we've got a live episode of the Iry Island Hour.
That's absolutely correct, sir.
8 o'clock Pacific time, 11 o'clock Eastern, mm-hmm. And now we've got the music licensing. So tell folks how that changes the show.
Well, basically, it's going to be a live show. It's not going to be podcasted, which means we can play signed artists. You know, like the greats of reggae music, like Bob Marley, Jimmy Cliff, and Gregory Isaacs. So we're going to get into some of that as well as play all of the favorites on the Iry Island Hour. So it's going to be 2 hours long tonight, from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, here on Potnet. So
yeah, check it out. Right on. Right here, radicalrust.com, potnet.us, and coming soon to the National Cannabis Coalition's page. We're also seen on theweedblog.com. We got all sorts of things to tell you about that. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But first, let's introduce from our virtual studio in Grand Astoria, Oregon, I forgot what we decided you were today, Carrie. What is the new title? News director.
Thank you, Russ.
The news director, Cannabis Carrie.
Sounds like a promotion to me.
You know,
I'm
having to change all of my stock answers and responses as it is, you know, with the name of the show, the name of the network and everything. So we might as well change everyone's titles while we're at it.
That's right. Why make it simple?
All right. Well, Carrie's got our Cannabis Chronicle at the top of this show right after this first break. So what do we have in headline news today?
Well, today, you know, on Monday, Governor Cuomo of New York State came out and said that the state should decrim. And man, that story has had a lot of legs. We've got another facet of it today. We're also going to go to Colorado and look at the effect of the legalization question on the presidential race. And then we're going to go to Vermont, and they're having their own issues on getting their dispensary program off the ground. I'll tell you all about that coming up in today's Cannabis Chronicles.
All right. Check that out. Also, you can hear the Cannabis Chronicle, the abbreviated version of the Cannabis Chronicle, at the top of the hour, every hour here on Potnet. So you'll get your latest news headlines on a daily basis from our own Carrie Gallagher. So thank you, Carrie, for doing that.
You bet.
We've also got coming up on the show today one of our favorite segments, the Iry Wednesday Daily Toker Tune. And Wiz Calico is going to take care of that for us as well. So who do we have coming up at 20 after?
We're going to play a favorite on the Iry Island Hour called Jay Boog. It's going to be his song Let It Blaze. It's going to be a great one.
All right, Jay Boog coming up at 20 after. And then at half past, probably the most favorite segment of the show, it's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. He writes the Ask Dr. Mitch column in High Times Magazine. He's also the author of many books on marijuana, including The Parent's Guide to Marijuana and many more. Dr. Mitch will be joining us at 1:30, and you can get your live questions answered through our chat room right here at chatango.com or at radicalrust.com, or you can call in live at 971-533-7111. Just wait till 1:30 when we get Dr. Mitch on the line. And then at the end of the show, time for a little bit of radical rant. I'm going to take a look at the most recent polling in California on the subject of marijuana legalization. As you know, California voted down Prop 19, their chance to legalize in 2010, by a 46% vote. You'll be surprised what the new support for marijuana legalization is in California, at least according to an LA Times poll. And we'll talk about whether or not their medical marijuana and how it's been laxly and support for marijuana legalization in the Golden State. Then stay tuned for hour two. We take your calls, bring you in on the conversation, and have ourselves a whole lot of fun. Check it out all here at RadicalRust.com. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. Help us legalize it. Text NCC to 420-420 and send $10 to the National Cannabis Coalition. The Russ Belville Show. We're as much like Cheech and Chong as ordinary Americans are like the Three Stooges.
Hey, Mo!
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Farrakh has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Smells like a skunk. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis. The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carey, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
We've been following the breaking news this week about New York Governor Cuomo working to decriminalize marijuana and the New York City Mayor's Michael Bloomberg's support of that measure. Today we found out that the Republican majority in the New York State Senate is not satisfied with the governor's proposal. Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos, a Republican from Long Island, said that the amount listed in the proposal was just too great. Current law decriminalizes possession of up to 25 grams of marijuana, but any amount in public view is a criminal misdemeanor that carries a much greater penalty. Officers in New York City do what has become known as the stop and frisk procedure and have citizens empty their pockets, then arrest them for any marijuana that was there. The governor wants to end that practice by extending decriminalization measures for the 25 gram possession law to include decriminalizing up to 25 grams of marijuana in public view. Senator Skelos told reporters this morning, quote, being able to just walk around with 10 joints in each ear and it to be just a violation, I think that's wrong, unquote. The decriminalization proposal faces the most challenges from the Senate, whose legislative session ends on June 21st. Supporters of the governor's decrim measures are hoping that an agreement can be made before the end of the session. Since the stop and frisk procedures produce an overwhelmingly majority of small amount marijuana arrests for minorities, civil rights groups have become active in finding a solution to the disproportionate numbers of young minority men being arrested for cannabis possession, even though the numbers indicate that whites are more likely to be the cannabis consumers. Senator Skelos said because of that, he is willing to work with civil rights groups across the state to address the issue. He admitted that since police have been charging people only when marijuana comes into view as a result of a police stop, that is wrong and a violation when you are only following a policeman's order. Now, with the support of both the mayor of New York City and the New York City Police Commissioner Kelly, along with the city council and many of the district attorneys, although they won't pass the bill in its current form, many are hopeful that some form of the governor's bill will pass before the end of the session. As always, we will keep you posted.
Well, you know, we've got a crack research team here at the Russ Belville Show, and between Ganja John and Wiz Khalifa, I don't think between the two of them they could find a way to walk around with 10 joints in each ear. I just don't think it's physically possible to roll them in such a way that you could stick 10 in each ear hole. But if you could, if anybody out there wants to try it, please take a picture and send it to me here, Russ at RadicalRuss.com, with 10 joints sticking out of each ear, so we can get a good idea just what a terrible danger that would be to the state of New York. Obviously, this GOP senator is really worried about people running around with joints sticking out of their ears. You know, the thing about this story that kind of gets me here is they accept that 25 grams is decriminalized in your pocket. Right. 25 grams in a baggie in your pocket, rolled into joints or not, is something that we're not that even the Republican senators agree we're not going to arrest you for. We're just going to give you a ticket. But if a cop tells you to take it out of your pocket and you don't know that you can refuse a search and that being told to take something out of your pocket is a search, folks, when a cop tells you to take something out of your pocket and you have something in your pocket that's illegal, you say no. You say, no, I don't consent to any searches. I'm not taking anything out of my pocket. Now, if he has probable cause to believe that you're carrying, you know, nitroglycerin or C4 explosives or a weapon or something, they'll find the way to get it out of your pocket. But then you're not going to be any more busted than you would have been taking it out of your pocket. See, the deal is that if it's in your pocket and the cop tells you to take it out and you say no, and then they pat you down and forcibly take it out of your pocket, your lawyer can get those kind of charges thrown out by getting the evidence thrown out in court for an illegal search. And even if he doesn't, you're no more busted by having that weed in your pocket and the cop finding it than you giving it to them and making the cop's job easy. But with all that, you know, we're talking about 25 grams or less, you know, what is that, less than 3/4 of an ounce or close to 3/4 of an ounce, maybe 7/8, but whatever, less than an ounce in your pocket is cool. But if we take it out and it's in public, it's suddenly a huge danger. What is it that these GOP senators are really so scared about? Are they scared that when other people can see weed, there's a problem? Like, as long as there's people out there smoking it and nobody knows, and nobody can tell, nobody can see it, then it's all okay. But the minute we take it out of our pocket and it's visible to the public, then we find danger, then there's a problem, then we need to arrest people. It really kind of shows you what the problem some people have with marijuana is. It's not the marijuana itself. It's not the fact that people are smoking marijuana. It's that when it's public, when we're open about it, when we're free to be who we are, it makes it harder to demonize us. It makes it harder to restrict marijuana use for other people. It makes it, shall I say, normal to be able to smoke marijuana. And other people might say, hey, these laws are stupid. We do need to vote out these guys that keep throwing marijuana smokers in a cage. That's what they're really afraid of. Not the marijuana itself, but that the concept of marijuana just being open and tolerated.
Vermont has finally opened up the application process for anyone who wants to run a medical marijuana dispensary in the state. The state will grant licenses to up to 4 commercial growers, and a state spokesman said today that they hope to be selling medical marijuana to state-registered patients by early 2013. Vermont's legislature voted to allow dispensaries exactly a year ago this week. And that law was signed into law by Governor Pete Shumlin. The law was passed as an addendum to Vermont's medical marijuana law that was passed in 2004. Since then, Vermont has allowed individuals that have certain chronic and debilitating conditions to register with the Department of Public Safety, not health, as a medical marijuana patient. They can then grow a small supply of marijuana only indoors as a medical therapy. The dispensary provision caps the number of dispensaries at 4, and for the very small number of patients in the state, the fees are astronomical. State law caps the number of patients to be able to enroll in the program at 1,000. You're going to need $25,000 to apply and $20,000 for your first year's license if you get approved. Any subsequent annual license would be $30,000 a year. And once the dispensaries are in operation, the law requires a patient to choose whether they will be growing their own medicine or becoming a customer at a dispensary. You can only choose one or the other, and the state administrators say they really don't know how many will choose the latter. Also in place, state law will allow communities to exclude dispensaries from their towns. And although most towns have not had that discussion about allowing or not allowing dispensaries, one town in particular has made that decision. Stowe, Vermont is the only known community pursuing the option of a ban. The Stowe ban is expected to go into effect on June 25th. Now, although the department hasn't received any applications yet, they have been busy today answering questions. Paco Amon, the spokesman for the Department of Public Safety, said that they have no way of knowing how many applications they will receive, but they plan to pick up four of them to become the state's first operators by mid-July.
Now, when you were mentioning that cap of 1,000, that's 1,000 dispensaries or 1,000 patients?
That's 1,000 patients that the state allows. I think the current numbers are right around 550 that they actually have enrolled, Russ.
That's just remarkable to me. Thanks for the story, but I to think that some bureaucrat somewhere has decided there's a certain number of people who should be helped through using medical cannabis. Imagine that Vermont does eventually fill up its rolls of 1,000 people. Imagine that they got the cancer patients and the AIDS patients and multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, and so on. And we find enough people to jump through these hoops now that there's dispensaries, because that's part of it too, is a lot of people, you know, they passed this law in 2004, and then they don't get around to figuring out access till 2011. Well, in that span there, 7 years, how many patients could have been helped but didn't bother because, well, you know, I can't grow. I don't know how to grow. My landlord won't let me grow. I'm in Section 8 housing, whatever. Or I, you know, just don't have the wherewithal to do it. How many people could have been helped, could have been on these registries, but didn't because there was no access? So 7 years of that, and you keep these rolls down to less than 500 people for how many patients. Now in 2011, you finally come around and vote for dispensaries. 2012, you finally get around to putting them together. There's going to be many, many more people now in Vermont. Now that there's access, now that there's a possibility that, hey, I could use this like any other medicine, you know, go to the store and get some, there's going to be more people wanting to register. So what happens, Vermont, when you get it to that 1,000-person limit, under state law, only 1,000 patients, and person number 1,001 comes through your door suffering from cancer? Person number 1,002 is waiting behind them with AIDS. Right. Sorry, we can't help you out. We can't help you out because this person over here, number 999, who has migraines, and number 1,000, who has epilepsy, you know, mild epilepsy that kicks in every, you know, so often, they already got those spots. And so you, Mr. Cancer, and you, Mr. AIDS, I'm sorry, you get arrested if you use cannabis. What a stupid thing to have in a medical marijuana law, a cap of how many patients you can have. Unbelievable. And this other thing here, having to choose between grow your own or going to a dispensary. You got to make your decision. Grow your own or go to a dispensary. So maybe you decide you're going to go to the dispensary and, oh, it's not what you expected. It's not the service you wanted. It's not the strains you were looking for. All right, now you got to go back and re-register and change back to grow your own. Or somewhere in between, maybe somebody has gone to the dispensary but still has a plant. Now they get busted and they're just felons for growing a plant instead of patients because they didn't properly decide which dispensary they're supposed to go to. Again, more regulations built to try to separate who's sick enough to protect from arrest and who's healthy enough to throw in a cage. And it just gets more and more ridiculous the more we try to separate it all out. Let's just legalize it for everyone.
And I just wanted to quickly address an article that came out of the Washington Post this week. I surely want to hear what Russ has to say about it. It concerns a legalization question that is already qualified on the ballot in Colorado. Colorado may be one of the battleground states when it comes to the presidential race come November. And voters in Colorado will be voting on whether or not to legalize marijuana in their state, and also will be voting between two presidential candidates who are on the same side of the matter, both against it. In April, Obama appeared in a late-night television interview with Jimmy Fallon that aired the same night as Obama spoke at the University of Colorado in Boulder. The president laughed off a question from the talk show host about marijuana, saying, quote, "We're not going to be legalizing weed or what anytime soon." Earlier that day, Obama was cheered at the University of Colorado, but booed when he thanked the university chancellor, who had just shut down the largest annual college pro-marijuana rally this year on campus. Now, Romney hasn't done any better in Colorado on the marijuana issue. He was stopped by the state to campaign before the Republican primaries and was annoyed with a local reporter when she asked him about medical marijuana. He answered her saying, "Isn't there anything of significance you would like to ask me about?" Bad political move in a state that has a successful medical marijuana industry that provides thousands of jobs and millions of dollars in revenue to the state, and an issue that the Colorado legislature now spends a good deal of time debating every session.
Well, yeah, this is going to be interesting in Colorado. I don't think Obama is in serious trouble in Colorado just because of the electoral politics of it all outside of the marijuana issue. Like we say, you know, Romney's not got anything better to offer to medical marijuana people, and probably far worse as far as what he would offer economically speaking and for this, you know, burgeoning industry. I know he's not going to be standing idly by and letting, you know, dispensaries continue as they continue. It's an interesting bit of electoral math. Romney's got a problem in Colorado with the growing Hispanic population there, and his issues is with regards to immigration, some of the things he said on that. So, but on the other hand, Colorado has a fairly significant Mormon population. I think it's third only to Idaho and Colorado, and well, no, maybe California as well. But anyway, significant enough that it could be a bump for him. But I don't really see that the medical marijuana vote. You know, I could see a protest vote, not for Obama. Maybe people voting for the Libertarian Gary Johnson, or maybe some other third parties. But I can't see someone who's mad at Obama then saying, "Well, I'll show him. I'll vote for Romney." That doesn't make a whole lot of sense when what you'd get out of Romney would be as bad or worse than anything Obama's done on medical marijuana. And seeing how Obama has shifted his stance on gay marriage, I think with the proper amount of political pressure from the grassroots movements, he can be switched on this one, too.
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots, you know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
All right, we're going to take a little break. Come right back with some Irie Wednesday music from Wiz Khalifa, bringing us some J-Book. I love the way Dan Michael says roots. Very North Dakota of him. We'll be right back after this.
He would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a gift. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Fire it up. Flame on, flame on if you can.
You're looking for that dope weed. Bully boy's a man. Flame on, flame on if you can. All right, welcome back here. I still have so much work to do on getting a lot of the liners and introductions changed over from the previous show. And this is one of them. Today's stuff, I had meetings this morning and just did not get to be able to recut the Irie Wednesday intro. Normally, you'd be hearing some wonderful reggae music and I'd be switching over to Wiz Khalifa here and telling you about what we're going to play. So pretend you just heard some wonderful Irie Wednesday music and the explanation that Irie Wednesday is all about the roots of reggae, ska, calypso, Latin, world music, all that mellow vibe type of music that just makes you feel good. So we switch over to Calico Castile, who hosts the Irie Island Hour, and he's going to tell us about this next tune.
What's up, guys? As the resident mellow mood dude around here, not the glass shop, but the actual state of mind, I'm going to go ahead and play some music by a fellow named Jay Boog. He comes from California, Southern California, and he's of... he's of Samoan descent, and he's a mixed guy. But you guys should check him out at jboogmusic.com. He gets around on all over the place, up and down the West Coast, as well as across the islands. And we love him on the Irie Island Hour. We want to go ahead and play this song called "Let It Blaze," which is just a great tune that's pretty popping, I would say. It's something you should play on a Friday night, but being that it's a Wednesday afternoon, we're gonna play it anyways. So here's a little energy for you. This is called "Let It Blaze" by Jay Boog.
When police lock down the sun, it's like when the trials every day, with an overload of stress on the brain. Just let us stay, let us stay, let us stay, blazing high grade every day. Yeah.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor,
just let us stay, let us stay, let us stay, blazing high grade every day. Yeah. And let us stay, playing roots, reggae music always.
Always.
Yeah, yeah. Jano, 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 Jano. Well, oh, well. Like so many love Dublin. I saw the world of high grade, natural from the earth. So Babylon, stop fighting. Now correct your thoughts and how you feel about it. Herbs and reggae music, the world can live without it. Just let the natural mystic flow. Let reggae music touch your soul, soul. When it hits you, you will know that the feeling that you feel, you're not alone. When the high grade number, and it's a nice when police lock down the sun. It's like we're living in Alcatraz every day. With an overload of stress on the brain. Just let us stay, let us stay, let us stay. Blazing high grade every day,
every day.
Yeah, yeah. And let us stay, let us stay. Playing roots, reggae music always. This is for real. This is for real. This is for real. Well, I'm wild. Sweet smell of vibrate blazing in the air. Sound man playing the music, people on fire. Sweet smell of vibrate burning in the air. Sound man playing the music, people on fire. When the high grade number, and it's a nice when police lock down the sun. It's like we're living in Alcatraz every day. Stay, let us stay, blazing high grade every day.
The Irie Island Hour. Irie Island music with a splash of student activism from Wiz Calico at IrieIslandHour.com.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Potnet. Turn on. Tune in. And drop prohibition.
Welcome back, everybody. 28 after the hour. And as I was mentioning earlier, I have a whole bunch of editing work still to do to get a lot of our introductions and our liners and bumpers switched over to the new network. And this is another one that I haven't yet had the time to do. It's time for our cannabis Q&A segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, the newly renamed segment. We want to welcome back Dr. Mitch Earlywine. He's an associate professor at SUNY Albany and the author of numerous books on marijuana and also humor. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Mitch.
Delighted to be on the show with you.
I don't know if it's necessarily welcome back or welcome to, because this is the first show you've been on for the new show.
It feels brand new to me.
Well, good. All right. Well, glad to have you here. And for folks that are new to the to what we're doing here with the cannabis Q&A segment, Dr. Mitch can answer your questions on science, culture, history, and health of cannabis, hemp, and all its uses. Save the strain cultivation questions for our third hour. We've got Danny Danko from High Times. His show is on live coming up in a couple of hours. So the strain cultivation stuff, we'll leave that for Danny. But everything else, Dr. Mitch will probably have a handle on that. And we're also, we take your calls at 971-533-7111. We can also take your questions through our chat room. So if you want to get up on RadicalRust.com, you can ask them through the chat room and Carrie will pick them up for us. But before we get to the questions, we always let Dr. Mitch fill us in on the latest scientific developments. And since I've been away for 3 weeks, I imagine there might be a few things to say. So what's happening in the world of cannabis and science?
As it turns out, we're getting a little more evidence about cannabidiol having some novel effects, including confirming its anti-seizure effects, which I was delighted to see, and also some fun animal work showing yet again that, what a surprise, cannabis can enhance appetite even among folks who are really severely ill. So
that's fantastic.
Nothing new in a sense, but it's nice to confirm that.
Yeah, nice confirmation on that. And I know that with cannabis and appetite, a lot of research or a lot of researchers are interested in looking at the endocannabinoid system and how it might regulate appetite. You know, I did a story earlier this week on New York City Mayor Bloomberg wanting to put a ban on large-sized sugary soda drinks in restaurants and such. And I kind of went off on it as being, you know, you're kind of attacking the wrong part of the problem here as far as obesity goes. But with respect to the endocannabinoid system and its possible uses in the treatment of obesity, where are we at on that, and what do you predict might be possible?
Well, what's funny, Russ, is we've seen, at least correlationally, that cannabis users are actually less likely to be obese than folks who don't use. And I think in a sense, we're all looking for appropriate stimulation of that system. And some folks get it from food, and some folks get it elsewhere. So I think that that's certainly intriguing. We saw with that Ramonaban drug that clearly this is not a system you want to mess with pharmaceuticals, because it can lead to depression and oddball things like that, even if it does help you shed a few pounds. But more than anything, I just want to encourage folks to have a lot of nice lean sources of protein and plenty of good vegetables around whenever they're indulging, so they've got something nice to turn to when the inevitable munchies kick in.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at this from the point of view of you want to ban large sodas, but, you know, meanwhile, you can get an extra large milkshake to go with your Monster Thick Burger. You know, so kind of attacking.
Well, the irony of that is more an economic one, where, you know, folks who are poorer really do have to rely on the 99-cent menu, whereas, you know, the ingredients for a fresh salad are a little pricier, and maybe that's the place where we really want to intervene.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're talking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine and taking your questions on cannabis science, history, culture, and health at 971-533-7111, or just visit our site at RadicalRust.com, and you can click into the chat room and give us some questions that way. On the political side of things, Dr. Mitch, we were talking about California and Colorado and Washington and Oregon. Of course, California voted on legalization in 2010. These other three states, Washington and Colorado, are all ready to go with it, and Oregon looks poised to join them on the ballot. And I just want to take a look at the politics of this. And as we move forward, we just did a story on Colorado and how the medical marijuana industry and Mitt Romney is trying to campaign out there, and how much the medical marijuana vote could make a difference in the presidential election. As you're looking at this issue and as you're looking at medical marijuana and people's voting patterns, do you really think it's gotten to a point where it's going to make a difference in any major size election like that?
What I'm eager for to actually do as far as impact is concerned is more a question of turnout than vote. So if everybody listening and all their friends and everybody who's on our side on this issue will make sure they make it to the polls, that's actually what's going to make the difference. So I do feel like particularly medical marijuana is polling over 70% and legalization in that 51, 52, 53 range in a lot of ideal places. But the key is, you know, picking up all your friends and everybody driving to the voting booth together. And that's, I think, what's really going to make the difference. And we'll suddenly see Obama putting, you know, money where his mouth is. And more importantly, local officials saying, okay, now I'm willing to approve these state referenda, or I'm willing to approve a police lowest enforcement priority. And that's how we're going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another side of the politics on this has to do with the drug czar. And, you know, he's starting to get a lot of questions now with regard to marijuana. And we're seeing more discussion of the marijuana legalization issue in the mainstream press and in TV shows and radio shows and so forth. And the frame they seem to be coming back with from the drug czar's office is, well, for you, you know, we know we can't arrest our way out of this problem. And for years, we've been, this discussion has been divided between two extremes of prohibition and legalization. And what we're proposing is a science-based, health-based approach that treats addiction like a disease and does more emphasis on treatment and prevention and so forth. And I'm just wondering if you've heard that and what your take is on this new kinder, gentler drug war.
So in fact, I have heard it, and on occasion, the budgeting even reflects that, but the numbers on arrests are not dropping the way I think they ought to drop, and these you know, judges making referrals to inpatient treatment programs for folks who are using cannabis is a real waste of resources. I do feel like if we had federal decriminalization, much like they have in some areas in Australia and things like that, that would be such a better use of our resources. Officials don't have to ring the legalization bell yet. They can still keep their illusion of being hard on drugs, but you know, talk the health issue and make things go a whole lot better. And you know, as you've said before, if somebody really is problematically using, of course we want to intervene, and jail is not the place to do that ideally.
Yeah, and I think there's also the unintended consequence of when drugs are illegal and you've got a problem with them, you are less likely to go seek help because of the possibility of getting busted for your problem.
Or even just general stigma about problems in general. And I'm hoping to, you know, kind of take that stuff away, where everybody understands that a subset of folks, you know, go a little over the edge on caffeine, on Benadryl, on all kinds of things. Let's make sure that that's something that's just as acceptable as we finally become with a whole lot of other disorders like diabetes.
Yeah. We got a question coming in from our chat room at RadicalRust.com, and I just wanted to set this up with, as we were making the transition over these past few weeks, I sent an email out to Dr. Mitch, and I got a reply back that said, if you're questioning whether or not your grade was accurate, it probably was. So I just want to remind folks that Dr. Mitch teaches a lot of these classes out at SUNY Albany dealing with drugs and marijuana, and they must be some of the most popular courses on campus, aren't they?
In fact, I got 3 teaching awards this year, and that's my record, so I'm pretty excited.
Fantastic. And they're always filling up, and always, you know, there's a lot of enrollment for those. So we have a question regarding that, since you teach these kind of classes. When are you going to do an online course that someone can get credit for?
I have to get approval from an accrediting institution, and so I'm talking to folks here at SUNY about it, but they want to charge an inordinate amount in order to make that happen, so I'm trying to work around that.
This sounds like a job for our loyal and trusty group of listeners. We could put together some sort of a Kickstarter for it or something.
Well, anybody who's a fan of accrediting institutions may be a good connection for me on this.
All right. Well, the email address, in case you want to get in touch with Dr. Mitch, is 420research@gmail.com. 420research@gmail.com. It's on the screen right there. You can just write it down. And he'll definitely get back to you on that. And, you know, if we can find a way to help fund more education, you know, more legitimate education on this issue, I think that's worth all of our time. So let's see what we can do about that. I'll talk to my friends out here at National Cannabis Coalition, too, and we'll see, you know, as we're putting together this streaming network and taking it to the next level, offering courses like that are something that we might want to be involved with. So let's see if we can figure that out. All right. Question from one of our listeners. Could you address the wordsmithing that Stephen D'Angelo uses when he says wellness is not recreational use? The whole all uses wellness or all uses is medical argument.
I appreciate his distinctions on that, and I do feel like many of us use cannabis in a way to enhance our wellness, and I think that focus is better than the problem focus in many ways. So if you can imagine assessing folks not only how are things going awry, but how is your spiritual life, how is your academic life, how is your intellectual life, how are your relationships, by all means, let's focus on that. And if cannabis users are doing fine in those domains, which we have incredible data to show that's the case most of the time, then by all means, let's take that approach. Years back, they tried to use the terms drug safety instead of harm reduction, and I felt like that was a step in the right direction as well. So by all means, I'm willing to throw the wellness term around.
Mm-hmm. You know, interesting you bring up drug safety versus harm reduction. And framing is something I always take a big look at. And it is one of the tenets of framing is that when you invoke a frame, even if you're negating it, you're invoking it. So when you say something like harm reduction, you're emphasizing that there's harm. And so when you say drug safety, you're emphasizing that these can be safe. So that's kind of an interesting framing argument there. All right, let's.
I'm very much behind that.
All right, and you know, one of the latest ones that I'm starting, and I'm trying to work this into my vocabulary, is to no longer say drug war, but to say prohibition war. So, anyway.
Don't touch that dial.
Oh, I won't. Oh, sorry, my timing is all messed up on with the switch over here, so I've still got things going off when I don't expect them to. All right, another question we got here from the chat room, I love this one. If you have a prescription for Marinol, and can you then smoke marijuana, or will they tell the difference between Marinol and natural marijuana on the drug tests?
Only if they're doing a specific drug test, but that THCV that we've discussed in before can reveal that you're actually using cannabis, not Marinol. And so you can get busted as far as that's concerned, but that test is a little bit separate and a little more expensive and a little less common, so there may be hope.
Hmm. Okay. Here's another interesting question from Timmy out there in the chat room. I like this one. How much does adrenaline affect your cannabis high when you get a big burst of it from fright or excitement? For instance, when someone gets a big scare and then they say, well, that just killed my buzz, is there something to that, or is that just in our heads?
What's intriguing is we don't have a ton of data on this, but Bob Peel up in Canada looked at this and basically showed that emotional experience tends to be increased in any direction after using cannabis, including the illusion of sobriety after a big scare or a big emotional reaction. And so there may be an expectancy component to that, but we're definitely seeing that confirmed time and again. It's not adrenaline per se, as far as we know, so much as just a general emotional reaction.
Mm, okay. And is there any other, you know, when there's other aspects of the marijuana high that sometimes people will say, for example, first-time users will say, well, I didn't get high the first time I tried it. Or long-time users will say, oh, I don't get high like I used to. So how much variation is there in the subjective high people are getting based on, I mean, can you not get high the first time? Is that possible?
The intriguing thing about not getting high the first time is, of course, if you're inhaling smoke, a lot of folks are just not experienced at that and don't really know how to do that. I feel like folks who use a vaporizer the first time will argue that, in fact, that is a relatively rare occurrence to not get high. And if you're using edibles, there's just no way around it. So I'm eager to see how folks react if that's their first experience. And then older users who claim that they're not getting as high as they used to, of course, the most compelling argument is tolerance. And we've certainly seen a lot of evidence for that, even in the laboratory.
Okay, so but you know, one of the things that I experience sometimes out here in a medical marijuana state out here in Oregon is this idea that medical users like to say, "Well, I don't get high from it." It's not like when recreational users are using it. I'm not getting high from it. It's medicine. But given two people that are using cannabis at the same rates, does it really matter whether or not it's having a medical effect on the user to whether or not it's having the same psychological effect on the user?
It's curious because that subjective experience develops tolerance quickly. And I mean, I know medical users who basically, do a little tincture every night before bed and claim, I don't get high and I don't have seizures now. And I think, if you are high, you're probably asleep. And I completely believe you. Nevertheless, as dosages go up, of course, even the most experienced folks, we've seen them at conferences before, will definitely report subjective effects.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Mitch, for joining us again here on the Russ Belville Show for the first time. And once again, in our long relationship of having these discussions, and encourage everyone out there, if you've got any questions for Dr. Mitch, send him into 420research@gmail.com. And we'll do this all again next Wednesday. So, Dr. Mitch, thanks once again.
I just want to wish you all the best on the new format, the new show, and I'm really excited about being a part of it.
Oh, thank you so much. All right, folks, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have some time for a radical rant, so stick around.
The Normal Network brings you the best in daily Toker tunes at 3 and 9 o'clock Pacific Time, a.m. and p.m. every weekday. Each day features a different genre, including Roots Monday.
Folks, here's a story about Mindy the Moocher.
Electric Tuesday. Irie Wednesday.
Summer ganja planter. Call me the ganja farmer.
Groovin' Thursday.
Don't you wanna get high?
And Rockin' Friday.
Some they like to hit the ball. Some just hook the ball.
Don't touch that dial. Radical Russ and the Rolla J Studios crew will be right back after these messages. Does internet radio even have a dial? Guys? This is the Russ Belville Show. What's playing right now on Potnet? Find the now playing listings on the Potnet main page at potnet.us. Get the entire 24-hour schedule on our Potnet Google Calendar. Potnet. Your source for 24-hour reform programming.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks, time to get back on the rant wagon here, and I got to talk about California once again. There's a new poll that came out while we were on break. Los Angeles Times reported on this, and You know, we've been reporting on the nationwide polls recently. Gallup poll went 50% for support of marijuana legalization. Rasmussen came in with 56% support. In fact, there have been seven polls since 2009, seven polls by five different organizations that have shown 50% or greater support for the legalization, treating marijuana much like we treat alcohol or tobacco. So this is something that we know is becoming increasingly popular amongst the general public. However, this new poll in California has me worried. This is from the Los Angeles Times. 80% of voters support doctor-recommended use for severe illness, a USC Dornsife Los Angeles Times poll found. That's medical marijuana, 80% support. But only 46% of respondents said they support legalization of, quote, general or recreational use by adults, end quote, while 50% oppose it. Those against using pot were more adamant in their position, with 42% saying they felt strongly about it, compared with 33% for proponents. The survey found opinions have not measurably changed since voters defeated the legalization initiative, Prop 19, in 2010, by similar margins. And oddly, given the state's long role as a leader of marijuana decriminalization and cultivation, support for sanctioning its general use here appears to lag behind sentiment in the rest of the country. With this uptick in popularity, marijuana advocates succeeded in getting initiatives qualified for the upcoming November ballot in Colorado and Washington, while they failed in California. And they, again, note that Gallup's support was 50%, Rasmussen supports 56%, and so forth. So we know how Prop 19 turned out in California when they tried to legalize statewide. They got 46.5% of the state's voters to support legalization. And that was a record for any state that had ever put it before the voters. However, in looking at the results, we saw that it lost, shockingly, in the Emerald Triangle, which is that set of three counties, the main marijuana-growing counties of Humboldt, Mendocino, and Trinity counties, where their very livelihood depends on the marijuana industry. And that might be part of why we saw it lagging there in that area, because that industry is propped up on prohibition profits. It is propped up on the risk that growers and distributors and traffickers have to add for the fact that the state or the feds could bust them at any time. So how much of this vote is people looking out for their own self-interest and realizing that prices have already gone down from $3,000 a pound to $1,500 to $1,200 a pound in California, to how much lower would they go under a legal, taxed, regulated market where large companies could be involved in the industry as well and use economy of scale to get that cost of growing down to 20 to maybe even 10 bucks when we talk about it at the retail level, maybe, you know, 50 or less a pound. So you could see why some of these growing counties might not be so sanguine on the idea of legalization. There was also a lot of scaremongering from people involved in the medical marijuana industry at that time. Medican, the Cannabus, there was a few other dispensary operators that were against Prop 19, vocally so, going on the radio, even on national public radio, to call against legalization of marijuana in 2010 in California. Many of the doctors who write the permission slips, the little $45 permission slips to get medical marijuana in California, had come out against it as well. And there were all sorts of scare stories of how marijuana would be monopolized in Oakland, how Richard Lee, one guy, was going to become the king of marijuana and nobody else would ever be able to grow it. And Philip Morris would buy up all this land and Monsanto would take care of all the seeds and make them Terminator seeds and yada, 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 yada. Heard lots of excuses and a lot of scaremongering, but when you get right down to it, marijuana is still illegal in California today, and it looks like it's going to continue to be illegal because they don't have anything on the ballot for 2012. And according to this new poll, still sitting at 46% support for legalization. So aside from those folks, aside from the people who, you know, might be in it for themselves and want to keep the gravy train going, let's just look at it from the general Californian point of view, the general voter's point of view. How much of California's lagging behind the rest of the nation at 50 to 56% actually owes to the Compassionate Use Act, Prop 215? In the rest of the medical marijuana states, qualifying for a card involves much more scrutiny than California, where you can get a recommendation to treat arrest anxiety syndrome and overloaded wallet disease from a doctor in a tent at a pot expo. But for people in other medical marijuana states, they still perceive of medical marijuana use as marijuana use for medical purposes. For people in non-medical states, legalization is just a fantasy that could never be worse than the prohibition they live under today. But in California, some people probably like it the way it is and don't want to rock the boat. Hey, it's legal enough. All I got to do is go see the pot doc and get my permission slip, and then I can go shop in the best marijuana shops in the world. But then for the people who are against it, who already doubted medical marijuana to start with, they see what has emerged in California as this laissez-faire marijuana commerce with, you know, very little regulation or limits. And maybe they're worried, gee, this is how bad it is when we just let the supposedly sick people get it. How bad will it be when everybody can get it? So has the lax regulation, or in some cases no regulation under California's Prop 215, actually caused other Californians to reduce their support for what they thought legalization would be? Could it be for the people in Texas or Tennessee or Vermont or Hawaii or anywhere else that answers these polls, they still think of legalization as a concept, as something to be attempted, whereas in California they may have seen it as something that already exists and has gone terribly awry. Now, to this point, I wanted to bring up some photos. For those of you that are watching on the webcast here, this is just a series of shots that come from my various trips to expos that were all billed in one way or another as medical marijuana, billed as this is, you know, marijuana use for sick people, and here we are celebrating that. There's, of course, the medical bong gas mask that I'm sure that a lot of people out there with serious medical conditions could benefit from. There's one of the medical distributor's spokes models there, who's obviously going to tell somebody something very serious about their health and the science involving it. There's one of the collectives that are selling their medicine at the reduced price of $39 for a 4-gram eighth. So people that want to tell you about science and stuff want to say that an eighth weighs 4 grams. And again, more of these scientific spokespeople for these different medical industries, you know, telling folks how medical their marijuana use is. And so as these pictures run, imagine that you are showing this slideshow to your grandma in the Midwest and trying to explain to her that no, marijuana really does help people. Marijuana really does help the person who's puking from cancer. Marijuana really does help the AIDS patient who's suffering from some sort of wasting syndrome. To see, when they see tie-dye everything booth, they don't associate that with something that they would see at a medical convention. Now, ironically, this is kind of the catch-22 of marijuana legalization, because you take a step forward in reform, but you don't go the full way to legalization. So anything bad that happens from the baby step gets attributed to the direction you're walking, right? So, like, for example, when we first decriminalized in the 70s in Oregon and a few other states, when you first decriminalized, the bad thing that happened is now you've got a bunch of people who are the consumers who have less risk, but the producers out there still have all the risk in the world. It kind of reminds me of something somebody told me today when I was talking to them. They said, yeah, they always want to decriminalize these small amounts, these personal small amounts. Where do they think personal small amounts come from? They come from illegal felony large amounts that someone else grew. So you've built this consumer base with decriminalization that has less risk when they want to go and participate in that unregulated market. And similarly with medical marijuana, we've gone forward with legalizing for just a few people under certain circumstances, and then anything bad that happens after that gets attributed to, oh, well, see, we told you if we legalized even just a little bit, bad things would happen. No, it's because we haven't legalized far enough. It's because there still exists the $1,000, the $1,200 pound of marijuana that makes it lucrative enough to want to steal from a patient. It's because there still exists 90% of the market out there that aren't served by medical marijuana laws, who create the demand that keeps that price high, and keeping it illegal for the growers and the distributors keeps the supply scarce. And any first year economic student can tell you that is going to lead to high prices. Any bad thing that you can point out that has happened because of a medical marijuana law has not happened because of the medical marijuana law. It's happened because of the prohibition that opposes the medical marijuana law. The very fact that we have to have medical marijuana laws in the first place is the problem. There shouldn't be any need for a medical marijuana law. We should all have the natural right to use the plants that come out of the ground. It's none of the government's business so long as we're not harming others. But reality being what it is, marijuana has been a Schedule I drug. It's been prohibited for so many years now. We have to go step by step in dismantling this abomination. And, of course, medical marijuana is one of the best steps we have taken, one of the furthest we've ever come along in reform for so many people. But at this point, it's time to recognize that we may reach a tipping point, and we're starting to see it in the East Coast, where East Coast medical marijuana is developing to be something completely different than West Coast medical marijuana. East Coast is no home grows. East Coast is being locked into dispensaries. East Coast is having a very restrictive condition list and very small amounts that are allowed. And so we're going to have to recognize that this is the time, this is the fork in the road, where if we don't break through with legalization in one of the three states that's going to pass it, then the path starts to bend back toward more restrictions. I really, you know, as much as these polls have gone up in general and have shown the growing support for marijuana legalization, I still fear that pendulum swinging back. I still fear that backlash. We saw it happen in the 70s. It could happen again. We have to be vigilant. We have to keep pushing forward with legalization, and we've got to break through in 2012. I hope everyone in the medical marijuana movement is behind us on this one and gets involved in helping to legalize in Washington, in Colorado, and in Oregon. Legalize for the healthy people, and it gets better for the sick people. That's all the time we got. I'm Radical Russ for Ganja John, Wiz Khalifa, and Cannabis Carry. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.